welcome once again, my friends, to the Global Gael podcast. My name is Philip O'Connor, and you are listening to the podcast for the 70 million Irish people or people of Irish extraction around the world.
So, this Stephen, podcast, as you will know, the piece I was thinking of writing
for, you're
that
listener.
I want to write
you've
for Reuters
that like
about
you've
using
that
your system for sort of
engineering
prevention.
This is the
and
podcast that is based on the premise
we
that there is no such thing as an ordinary Irish person abroad, and every week we bring you the story of a new fascinating Irish person and what they're up to in the world. I hope you enjoyed the recent episode there with Tomás McInseer, who was cycling from New Zealand to Ireland. That's just one of the great stories that we've been able to bring you over the years. And this week, we're bringing you a fantastic business story, right? Now, this one is a little bit different because usually I would find people online and I'd dig them up myself and that kind of thing, but somebody actually approached me. Not out of the blue. This is a lovely person who works in PR that I've known for a long time. And they said, oh, you know, I have this person that I'd like you to talk to. I do a lot of work for the Reuters news agency in terms of sport and that kind of thing. And this person knows that. And they got in touch and they said, okay, I have this this person here. He's actually Irish like yourself. And I thought, great. And it's all to do with sports and data and intelligence and health and Stephen Smith and how he was working with Leinster Rugby and how he came up with this idea to create a platform called Kitman Labs. Now, many of you are like me, sports fans, and you will see, you know, rugby players and soccer players and all that kind of thing wandering around with GPS things on and all sorts of trackers and sensors and that kind of thing. And many of you are probably wondering, where does all that data go? And I think Stephen was kind of wondering the same thing, and he realised it's going to many different places. Now, I'm not going to tell you the story and then have him tell it to you again, but he came up with an absolutely brilliant idea. So we did an interview for the Reuters news agency. We said we kill two birds with one stone, right? And we did an interview for the Reuters news agency. And the first 10 minutes or so of this conversation is to do with knee injuries in women's sports and that kind of thing and how they come about and how the data that Stephen collects or the platform that he has uses the data collected and might be able to help sort of stem the tide of knee injuries and other injuries that are happening in the women's game, which of course has grown like mad altogether. And then we get into the story of how he moved from Ireland to California and what he's doing over there and running a business over there. And it just turned out to be a fascinating conversation. Extremely intelligent chap altogether and an amazing vision altogether. You know the way you often think, you know, with ghost business ideas, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't somebody pull all this together? And Stephen has very much done that in terms of the sports data and the sports science space. And a great part of that, especially a lot of you will be hopefully coming to this podcast through the likes of LinkedIn, because it's more focused on a company, that kind of thing. And maybe you might be coming to it because it's been shared by Enterprise Ireland, because I know a lot of good people at Enterprise Ireland here in Stockholm in the Nordic region where I live, and I'm hoping that they're going to share it as well, because they've been very supportive of Kitman Labs from the very beginning, and I'm sure the lads at Kitman Labs are very appreciative of that support. But it just goes to show again that the sort of the extent to which our state agencies, I have to say, they deserve great credit for tourism, for Bord Bia, Tourism Ireland, Enterprise Ireland, all these other bodies that work on our behalf, and indeed our diplomats and ambassadors around the world who, like this podcast, are telling the great stories of great Irish people and great Irish companies and great Irish community organisations around the world. Right, without further ado, let's get to this fascinating chat with Stephen Smith. Enjoy.
We maybe start by you explaining exactly what the system does and where the idea came from.
Yeah, for sure. So I've spent my entire career working in professional sport and in rugby. It sounds like you're Irish, so it sounds like you have no issue knowing who the team are. Normally when I'm over here in the US talking to people, they don't know who it is. So I've spent my entire career working with Leinster Rugby.
So we don't have a space, it's their level one.
My role there essentially was to kind of connect the dots between the rugby side, the sports medicine side, the strength and conditioning side. And I think what we found very quickly was, whilst there's a huge amount of data being collected in one particular system, and then the medical staff have their information in a different system, and the fitness staff have their information in another system, very challenging and difficult to understand. How do we make great decisions? How do we better manage our athletes? How do we prepare them for the next game? How do we ensure that we're, you know, tailoring the way that we're developing our athletes based on their individual needs when we can't, you know, we can't complete a 360 degree view of the athletes. We can't paint a picture of every aspect about them. We can't understand how they're responding to what they're doing in practice, you know, training. We can't understand, you know, how they're feeling today and how that's going to relate to the next game, because all that information lives in separate places. So the entire idea for the platform emerged from my experience in Leinster Rugby, and the idea was to be able to do exactly that, was to take all of this information, pull it into one place, and give teams the ability to create that 360-degree view of their athletes, give them the ability to be able to make way better decisions that were tailored to what the athletes actually needed. And that was entirely it. That's what we're still working on today. And it gets the problem. The funny part about it is we thought the problem was huge at that point in time, and it's just getting bigger and bigger every year, because the amount of data that's emerging in this industry, the number of companies popping up to that, you know, are instrumenting every aspect of the athlete life cycle. It's just like, it's mind blowing how sophisticated that's becoming.
And is that the biggest challenge, Stephen? Because, like, you know, you can have all this data, but it's kind of like, you know, with Facebook and these other sort of social media sites, unless you know what it is you're looking for, it's interpreting that and sort of, you know, making plans based on that. So what does Kitman do, you know, for, say, a professional soccer club or a rugby club? How do you sort of filter through all this data? Are there different demands from different departments? You know, so, you know, the recovery department might want something from different from recruitment kind of thing.
Absolutely. But I mean, there's two problems, essentially. One is just getting all of the data together, because you can't, like, if the like you just said, right, if the recruitment department want to understand, you know, a particular aspect of, you know, what does the best athletes that we have, let's say if we look at a first team player today, what did that athlete look like when they were 13, 14 years old? Well, if they don't have access to all of that data, like, what do they look like from a physical perspective? What do they look like from a tactical perspective? What do they look like from a healthcare injury perspective? These are the types of questions that they're asking. So as they're assessing potential talent, they're able to make a recommendation and say, this person looks exactly like Messi did at that age. They can't do that unless they have all of those data streams together in one singular place. And that creates an issue. So that's the first part of that problem, is just having it all together. The second part of that problem is exactly what you said, which is, what are those questions? What are those types of problems that, you know, that they want to solve? And you're also 100% right in that each of those departments will have a completely different set of use cases. So if you're in, like, the strength and conditioning department and you're looking at that data, you might want to look at, well, how did we program for those people? What types of training programs did we give them? How did they adapt to that? So they want to understand, as somebody is improving, as they're developing, is that normal? Like, are there better ways for us to do that? What aspects of how we're training and building and programming for these athletes is actually working, and what aspects are not working? And again, they need all the data there to be able to go and answer those questions. So it's a big chunky problem for a couple of reasons. One, that we, you know, bringing all the data together is hard, but two, then, like, building the configurability to allow different departments and then different teams ask those relevant questions, you know, that's a big chunky complicated problem, but that's exactly what we've been working on for the last 10 plus years.
That's what brings value to these sort of software platforms, you know. Could I ask you about some of the specifics, right? Because with that amount of data, you're going to maybe see trends across sports and across teams and across genders and across all sorts of things. Is there anything that you've discovered did you start in 2012 with this particular company?
Yeah, I started the company in 2012. Listen, there's insights that we're seeing every day and every week, right? I think some of the most interesting things that we have seen, though, are, like, there's an expectation, I think, today, or maybe an assumption that's been made in the market today, that, well, with, like, all of these games and all of these increase in schedules and stuff like that for these teams, that the more that they're doing, that's causing all these injuries. These injuries are the result of, you know, these athletes being asked to do too much. It's the increase in the amount of work that they're doing that's causing the injuries. And I think oftentimes what we're seeing is that, because of that, there's been this movement in, like, sports science and sports medicine to say less is more, and to start to try and download athletes and give them more rest and recovery. And in lots of scenarios, we're actually seeing that isn't the right thing to do. And actually, from an empirical perspective, what we're actually finding is that because the game is getting bigger, faster, and stronger, the stimulus required to keep those athletes capable of dealing with those conditions in game is incredibly important. And actually, you know, having the right blend of like high stimulus activities is really important. It's not always just necessarily about downloading these athletes. It's actually about ensuring that they have the right stimulus, they have the right capabilities, they're robust enough to be able to actually, you know, to deal with the ever-increasing demands of the modern game.
It's fascinating. So that would imply then that, if you have this thing, well, World Cup or European Championships, it's 3 days rest, basically. You play every fourth day, more or less. In the Rugby World Cup, it might be every seventh or every eighth day. But you would say then that, you know, you can't just completely switch off and do nothing for 7 or 8 days. You actually have to be active and like, you know, and maybe highly intensively active at the same time to avoid injury further down the line. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's like a car. Like you wouldn't park your car in the garage and leave it there for a week and then just switch the ignition on and put it straight up to 100 miles an hour. You know, you'd be asking for a problem. So I think it's like it's the ability to like ensure that they can continue to go up and down and up and down, and having that right blend of like intensity day in, day out, week in, week out, and ensuring that, you know, they're capable of like I said, coping with the demands of the game. It's, you know, if you look at modern rugby, look at modern soccer or football, like it is getting faster. The game is quicker. The athletes are far more physical. Like the contacts are far more physical. That means that, like, if we think about that, whilst of course I'm not taking away from the importance of recovery, like that is obviously hugely important, and having the right level of individualized care from a treatment perspective and to understand how somebody is responding, like physiologically, how they're responding physically, etc. All of that is hugely important, but so is being fit enough, so is being strong enough, so is being, like, you know, powerful enough, so is having, like, getting enough distance, getting enough speed, getting enough acceleration. It's like if you're asking somebody to, you know, to make 50 sprints in a game, but then week to week you're like downloading them so much that they're not getting to sprint during the week, that's a huge task, and that's a huge physical exertion to place on an athlete. So it's about having the right blend, and it's about being able to quantify that. And that's why a system like ours is so important as well, because as you're collecting that week in, week out, you can see what the athletes are used to. You can see what they're accustomed to. You can start to like draw the comparisons between, oh, look what happened when they only did 20 sprints week in, week out. It looked like actually they were picking up more injuries. Look, when they were doing 40 sprints, actually they were far healthier. And you can start to actually join the dots and see those connections come together. That's where the real value is. That's like, it's that day-to-day research, it's that day-to-day understanding that these teams are building up through a platform like ours that you know, adds real utility and real value.
Would you say then that you could look at this data that comes in, you know, say if I work in the medical department or if I'm a physical trainer for a soccer club in America, I could look at that data and can I see where the red lines are approaching for a certain player? Can I see, okay, this 23-year-old central midfielder, he or she needs, you know, a couple of days of rest now, or you know, we need to download them a little bit, as you said. This 28-year-old actually needs to pick it up now towards the weekend. Is that what your system will make obvious to me?
Yeah, and I suppose it's not as binary as just, hey, they need to rest, right? It's actually the exact level of detail of, okay, they don't need more distance. They've done enough distance, but they need more accelerations, or they need more decent. It's the real quantification of, hey, like this person has lots of like load. They've done lots of, you know, they've covered lots of ground. They've covered enough ground that they're going to be able to get through the distance we need in the next game, but they actually haven't done that at enough intensity. Or they've done lots of accelerations, but actually they need more work on decelerations because there is way more decelerations in the game and it looks like they're not getting enough of that stimulus. And if you think about it, like, you're breaking the game down into every component, right? If somebody's not used to decelerating 50 times, then that's a huge physical toll. If you get enough of that stimulus in, then they're very capable of decelerating. They're very capable of putting the brakes on. They're very capable of staying healthy whilst being asked to do tasks like that.
It's phenomenally interesting, the whole thing. One of the things I wanted to ask you about specifically was, in recent years, we've seen an absolute plethora of ACL injuries, cruciate ligament injuries, in the women's game in football. And I wondered if you had looked, because you work with soccer clubs, you work with clubs in Europe, and you work with clubs in America. Have you seen anything in the data you've collected and the research that you've been able to do that might suggest a way to avoid those catastrophic injuries where players can be missing for up to a year?
Yeah, I think, listen, we know that the women's game is highly taxing, and we know that it again, the women's game is becoming more physical, it's becoming more professionalized. And you know that's resulted in like you know higher activities, stronger activities in game. We also know that the female body is different than the male body, and we know that from a biomechanical perspective, like a woman's hips are wider. They're wider because they need to be capable of like of you know of giving birth, and that means that they have what we call as a wide like a larger Q angle. The Q angle essentially is like the angle of the top of your femur down towards your knee. And why that's important specifically for ACL injuries is that most ACL injuries happen when like landing or trying to decelerate and change direction. And they happen generally when the knee gets flexed and it gets rotated and then it has this shearing action that occurs. Well, that shearing action is more accentuated when somebody has like a wider Q angle. So there's more of a like a bend essentially in the angle from their hip to their ankle through their knee. Well, women just have that wider and bigger anyway, so they're more predisposed to ACL injury because they have a greater angle at their hip. And what we also know is that during times of like hormonal change, different hormones release different chemicals that change like the structure and resilience of our ligaments. And so at different points through like the menstrual cycle for females, they are going to have like changes that make their ligaments more relaxed and essentially, you know, provide them more potential for like for torsion or friction. And that means that essentially, you know, they're at a higher risk of injury again, higher risk of ACL injury because of this. And I think what we know is that there's been a significant lack of research on female athletes in the whole. And I think what we're really excited about is we're now working alongside a couple of leagues, couple of female-based leagues globally to start collecting that data and understand what that means and to understand like the couple like the demands information, a couple of the game information, alongside the healthcare information and the information in relation to things like menstrual cycle, so that we can better understand the cause and effect, and then we can help like these clubs and leagues learn about how to better manage the female athlete. And that's an area that we're really proud to be involved in because it's pretty cutting edge. It's an area that's been ignored previously because people don't want to talk about the menstrual cycle, but the reality is for women, they have to deal with it. And I think we you know we just see it as such a huge opportunity to improve the standard of like you know health care that is provided to female athletes. And that's something that we're really passionate about, really proud about being involved in.
It's a, something you see a solution to in the sort of the near to medium term, Stephen. Is it, you know, when all this data comes in and just a little bit more research, and maybe you might go, aha, okay, this is how we deal with it. Or is it going to continue to be a sort of a an individual thing for people to manage themselves?
No, I think we're going to find, I think we will find patterns and we'll find insights. And then I think that those patterns and insights will help us to do a better job at tailoring that for each individual. So I don't think it'll ever be one or the other. I think what we'll need is like we'll need lots of data to be able to go on and identify those patterns and trends as they emerge. And then we're going to need to fine-tune those for every person because there's no two humans that are the same. There's also no two humans that are actually experiencing the same things on a daily basis either. So, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of each athlete, whether that's male or female, are going to be different. You know, the workload that they've got through on a training week is going to be different than each other just because of, you know, exactly their positional roles, demands, how they've been managed, how they've been coached, what they did in the previous game is going to be different, what they're going to be expected to do in the next game is going to be different. You know, all of those things just mean that like the level of individualization that's needed is hugely important. And I think we need to embrace that, but we need to identify the big patterns and trends that influence that, and then we need to use the data we're collecting day to day to individualize that for each person. That's essentially the role that we want to play.
You're living in Palo Alto in California at the moment, are you?
I'm actually living now in I was living in Palo Alto for almost 8 years. I'm now living in Sonoma County in Healdsburg in Sonoma County, which is up north. It's wine country, California. Sonoma and Napa
Californian
Valley
wine
and stuff.
country. Okay, so what was it that brought you up there? Because you know you were sort of in the heart of Silicon Valley for a little while, and now you've moved to the Napa Valley, which is more to do with wine than data.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of data involved in that as well. But I listen, what I think as my business matured and as the world kind of changed through COVID, I'm a country boy originally and grew up in the countryside in Ireland. And I think whilst I loved aspects of Silicon Valley, it was it's very different to what I grew up in. And I spent a lot of time. I've a young family and spent a lot of time in Sonoma County through. Through COVID, trying to give my kids some freedom and fresh air, and ended up just falling in love with the area and falling in love with the community. The sense of community, the sense of culture up there is very close to what I experienced in Ireland, like great family values, and it's just beautiful scenery and really interesting people all doing interesting things as well. So I moved myself, my wife and my family up to Sonoma County 2 years ago, and I've been really, really loving life up there.
Is this the kind of place you've
not that I'm happy with everything that I can still do what I'm doing from a business perspective?
You can still nip down the road, get onto the motorway and go do your thing, you know? Is it the kind of place you have to be? When you have a business like yours, do you kind of have to be there on the West Coast of America to be sort of at the heart of these things, to have access to people, to funding, to technology? Is that why you're in California, or would you consider moving back to Ireland?
Listen, I think the growth engine for our business is global. I think I'm getting exposure to incredible business people over here, incredible opportunities, incredible connections, and it's the right thing for my business for me to be based in the US at this point in time. It's also a nice, it's an interesting life experience as well, right? I think the level of innovation that happens in the US and specifically in the Bay Area is incredible. The amount of experience that people have with this type of like venture backed business and how to grow that and the strategies about how to unlock that and how to scale businesses. That is just, it's phenomenally interesting to me. The types of people that I'm getting to like deal with and network with is really important in my growth, right? I'm a first time CEO. I've never done any of this before. The problems that I encounter every day are first time problems for me. Whereas for people that have done this multiple times over, serial entrepreneurs and very successful entrepreneurs, they have done this multiple times. And the level of learning that I can take from that is hugely important in the decision-making process for me every day and being able to steer this company to a successful outcome. And I have access to that today in a way that I wouldn't if I was, in a completely different country on a completely different time zone. And, for all of those reasons, I think it's the right thing for me to do. And, I'm still very proud to be Irish, and I'm still very proud of where we came from. And we still make significant investment in Ireland through our staff and employees, and it's still our global headquarters, and that we'll always have that. But I think at the same time, it's the right thing for me to do to chair the business from this area right now.
Is it a very intimidating place to do business, Stephen?
No, I actually think it's a very warm and welcoming place to do business. I think it's I wouldn't use the word like intimidating. I think if you come over and you don't have an open mind about what you're trying to do, you don't have like, I suppose, a learning mindset, and you're not coming here to try and figure out how to do it. You're coming here with preconditioned ideas. I think it could be intimidating pretty fast, right? I think in areas like this, they don't suffer fools lightly. And, I think that's a really good thing, right? I think that's a really healthy thing. And I think it's meant that the exposure that I've got to people has been really great, but you're either here to learn and listen from them, and therefore you open your ears and you open your mind and you challenge your own thoughts and your own ideas, and you use that every day, or you don't. And I think that's unfortunately or fortunately, that's the difference between winning and losing here.
Has there ever been a moment there, when you go into a meeting or, you go and you have coffee with somebody and that kind of thing, and sometimes it will happen in the course of starting and developing a business like yours, that somebody tells you something that completely changes the way you look at your business for better or worse? Have you had that experience there that, maybe an experienced venture capitalist has sat you down and said, Stephen, look, you're doing everything perfectly, you're going to be a billionaire, or Stephen, you're absolutely mad, you have to change, you're not going to survive?
Yeah, absolutely we have. I've had that multiple times where like, the way that we're thinking about our business, they have shifted our mindset about it, right? And simple things like learning about, well, how do customers in your space buy? Like, how do teams buy? How do leagues buy? Why do they buy? What do they buy? How do they interact with each other? These might seem like very simple things, but when you're starting a business and you have an idea, your first port of call is, here's the thing that I have. Do you want it? It isn't really studying and learning and understanding, well, like, what's normal here? How do people do this? You know, what do they do? What do they not do? And, you know, I've learned so much about how to think about what we build, why we build that, the timing and prioritization of that based on like what our customers actually, you know, not necessarily just what they want, but how they make decisions, how they purchase, and, you know, what they place value on, what they don't place value on. That allows us to make better decisions about what we invest in, because if we're investing in things that are really, really interesting to us and to other, you know, other people in the industry, but they're not the things that the industry places value on, it's not what the purchaser actually places value on, it's not what they're willing to spend cash on today, then it's the wrong thing, because we'll never generate a business that's actually going to be, you know, that's going to be solid and reliable based on that.
In that case, what would you say your customers are buying? Because, you know, as you say yourself, like, we might be selling one thing, but the utility they get out of it might be something completely different. It might be, you know, shorter time on the injury reserve for American sports teams. It might be better able to predict the future of young players. So what do you think the lion's share of your customers are actually buying from you? What do they want from you?
Yeah, I think they're what they want is intelligence. They want insights. They want intelligence, right? I think a lot of what we have to do, we talked about this kind of earlier in this discussion, but like I said, there was two things that people are solving. One is to bring their data together, and the other is to basically understand what it means. I think what people actually care about isn't the data management side. They see that as a means to an end, right? That's a necessary evil. What they want and what they're willing to, what they really want to pay for is like competitive advantage. Like, what does every team in sports want to do? They want to be better. They want to be more successful. They want, you know, they want to win more games. They want to be standing on the podium at the end of the season, picking the trophy up. And that relies on them understanding their team. That relies on them understanding their athletes. So, what they really want is insight, and that's why, you know, for us, the intelligence platform was born. It was born to help people to better understand their information. It was born to help them to basically gather the insights from that, help them to understand what's meaningful and to use that to their advantage.
What's your own relationship to sport? Were you a very sporty kid growing up, or were you more sort of obsessed the way, you know, a lot of people who end up in America, you know, baseball and basketball, box scores and stats and that kind of thing. So were you a player or were you a stat man when you were growing up as a kid?
I was definitely not a stat man. No, I played Gaelic football, you know, all my, you know, younger years, and then turned to playing rugby when I was 12 or 13 and fell in love with the game and fell in love with the culture and the discipline around the sport as well. And ended up playing, played school rugby in Cistercian College, Rosbrae, ended up playing AIL rugby for County Carlow, and just, you know, was fanatical about that. Loved to watch soccer. Didn't really play it just because my environment where I grew up was very Gaelic football focused and then very rugby focused. But yeah, no, love sports and love the act of it. Still like to, still into athletics, do a lot of training, do a lot of running, a lot of weightlifting. Actually running a half marathon next month. So, you know, love the act of it. And I think the data side was just born from my experience working in professional sport and what I saw as a problem that needed to be solved.
Has your relationship to sport and how you view it changed? You mentioned earlier on there, you know, about the Irish rugby team and this kind of thing. You know, like, they drive me up the wall. It's one of the few teams, them and the Boston Celtics are the two teams I sort of watch more or less as a fan, because I write about every other sport, you know. Has your relationship to sport and how you enjoy it changed because of the nature of your business? I mean, you're doing this 50, 60, 70 hours a week, presumably.
Yeah, it certainly has. It's probably made me less fanatical in some ways. You know, I grew up being a fan and watching all of the games on TV and getting frustrated with, you know, the outcome that you can't control. But having worked in pro sport for so long and also being involved in what was a very successful Leinster side from, you know, 2007 up to 2014, you know, we won three Heineken Cups, a Challenge Cup and a couple of Magners Leagues or whatever it's called now, URC title. And seeing what goes into that, seeing what goes into a successful season, seeing what, like, the work that goes behind the scenes, being on the field for those games, being in the changing room, the halftime before the game, it gives you an understanding of what it takes. And not just what it takes from having the right talent, but having the right blend of culture, having the right mix of coaches, you know, having all of the component pieces that are important to build a successful team. It's complicated and it's very hard work. So if anything, it's given me more of an appreciation for when you see teams that win and teams that are consistently winning, that, you know, like, that is very deliberate, very intentional. And it's incredibly hard to do that. And so it's probably, you know, it's probably made me fall in love with the process more than anything else, which is probably why I love what I do, because I want us to be part of that. I want us to be a very integral part of that, right? And that's why that's the entire, like, meaning behind the name of the company, was that we, you know, I saw in Leinster, the kitman was a guy that did thousands of jobs that nobody valued or nobody saw, but were integral to the operation of the organization. And I wanted us to be exactly like that. I wanted us to be behind the scenes. I wanted us to be the ones that were driving those decisions and helping teams to drive those decisions and make the organization successful, but never the ones that are standing up on the podium collecting the trophy. We want to be enabling greatness. I'm just as excited, if not more excited, about that today than I was 12 years ago.
What's the biggest change you see coming down the track, Stephen? Because obviously, you know, you will see things coming through in the data. You'll see patterns emerging. You're going to know, because of your background in professional sport, how things are going to change. Do you see sports like rugby and soccer continuing to develop now over the next 10 years, or will they sort of remain similar to what we see today?
No, I think we're going to see a pretty significant uplift in a pretty quick time as well, with the emergence of things like skeletal data that's coming from games today. So we see a couple of leagues globally, like the NBA, that are piloting technology to look at skeletal information on athletes during gameplay. And I think that will probably, that combined with analytics and intelligence that's been coming from training data, that's been coming from medical data, that's been coming from fitness data, the combination of those data sources together are going to completely change the game. Because today we know what an athlete did just from an XYZ perspective. We know where they were on the field. We know how fast they moved. But we don't know how they did it. We don't know where they were looking. We don't know what their movement looked like. And by getting biomechanical data into that, or skeletal data into that, we get like a whole, like the richness of the data in terms of skill execution, in terms of like tactical awareness, what somebody was doing. We can now finally link what's going on in training to very specific components of tactical skill execution. We can also start to link those demands of the game to the biomechanics of how somebody runs and moves, and start to understand like potential degeneration or breakdown of athletes. So from a tactical understanding, from a developmental perspective, from a healthcare perspective, the culmination of skeletal data and then combining that with all the other data sources that teams and leagues have, I think is going to be one of the single biggest changes that we see in the industry, and is going to create a whole new set of capabilities for teams. And it will be an arms race for who can get that intelligence fast enough. And that is hugely exciting.
I've got to finish with one final question, and thank you so much for your time. It's been fascinating to talk to you. If there was one sporting event in the world that you could get to see live at this stage in your life, what would that be?
Oh, geez Louise, that is a very good question.
I'm presuming you've seen most of them at this stage.
I have. I've been to a Super Bowl. I've been lucky enough. I was brought along by a client of ours, a partner of ours, to the Super Bowl last year. So I've done that. That was a bucket list item. I've been on the pitch for European Cup final, so that's been pretty incredible. I don't know. I can give you two answers. I think Wimbledon is just something, like seeing a Wimbledon's final would be incredible, just because I've always grown up watching it, and it just looks like, it looks like such a great event. I think seeing an Irish rugby team on the field for a World Cup final and then actually getting there would, from a personal perspective, would probably be a huge motivation and hugely exciting. But I don't know. I'm very lucky. I get to go to events all the time, and our clients are great to us as well in terms of bringing us a game. So I've probably seen more incredible events than the vast majority of people in the world. And I've been very fortunate to have those experiences.
Something tells me that if the Irish rugby team had won a World Cup before this, you may never have even started your company. But Stephen, thanks so much for talking to me. It was brilliant altogether. And the best of luck with the next World Cup.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
There you go. I know I said reasonably regularly. I said about pretty much every guest on this podcast, my friends, but I really found that to be a fascinating chat with Stephen, not just about the sports science part of it, which really interests me, but also about being in business on the west coast of America there in Silicon Valley and doing deals and talking to people and that kind of thing. Is a great insight altogether from Stephen. Right, that is it for this week. If you would like to support the podcast, there's two things you could do. Well, there's probably about 10 things you could do, but there's two main things, right? The first is share it, right? Because this week it is Stephen talking about business and sports science and data. Next week, God only knows who we're going to be talking to or about. It could be an artist. It could be absolutely anybody. There's a whole bunch of episodes there. Scroll back through your podcast feed and you'll see the kind of things that we do be talking about on this. So please do share it. Send a note to somebody. Send it in the WhatsApp group and say, look, I found this interesting. The other thing you can do is you can contribute financially. If you can contribute a fiver a month, that would help me greatly. You can do that on patreon.com/errorman in Stockholm. patreon.com/errorman in Stockholm, and that will get me. Right, that is enough for this week. I should be back again either later this week or very early next week with another episode of the Global Gale podcast, telling the story of another extraordinary Irish person abroad. Until then, my friends, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, and I'll be back again very, very soon with another episode of the Global Gale podcast.